When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, Week 16 Game by Game Review Edition. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's happy Monday, merry late Christmas. We got New Year's coming up. Most importantly, we got those fantasy football championships that I'm hoping that you are firmly in if you are listening to this right now. So I hope you guys, again, had a great holiday season. A little bit different schedule, obviously, because of when the holidays decided to fall this year. But I am here riding solo with one cool thing to talk about from every single game that has happened so far in Week 16. Still got the Chargers and Colts on Monday night, so enjoy that one. But I will be going through all the action from an eventful Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday here right now on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. So with that, let's get after it, everyone. Going all the way back to last Thursday night, where the Jaguars take down the Jets 19-3, covering as 2.5-point dogs. The under cashed, even though it was at a lowly 36.5 points. So Evan Engram just continuing to do king shit here for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now the overall tight end 5 on the season. Last 4 weeks, PPR tight end 4, tight end 1, tight end 6, and tight end 4. I mean, at this point, through 16 weeks, 68 receptions, 723 yards, and 4 touchdowns. And the one thing that we always make fun of him with, and you see it every single time he drops a ball, Giants fans immediately get into the Twitter mentions and they go, yep, this is exactly what you guys are going to see. We haven't seen that this year, though. I mean, he actually has a lower, meaning better, drop rate than Travis Kelce, TJ Hockenson, Mark Andrews, Pat Freiermuth, Dallas Goedert, David Njoku, and plenty of other tight ends that we don't always associate with dropping the living shit out of the ball every time it is thrown their way. So Evan Engram, maybe it's Doug Peterson being the true tight end whisperer that we were kind of mocking this past offseason. Whatever it is, fantastic 2022 campaign from Evan Engram. On the Jets side of things, guys, we've now had 3 weeks of Zonovan Knight and Michael Carter together, firmly in this 2RB backfield with Ty Johnson mostly out of the picture. But in this stretch now, weeks 14 through 16, snaps, Michael Carter leads the way 93-83 over Zonovan. Carries is going to Zonovan's side 36-11. Targets, though, still clearly with Michael Carter 11-3. So I know we haven't gotten this, you know, end of the season stretch run we were hoping for from Zonovan Knight. Just realized continues to be the early down grinder to Carter being more of the pass down back. Basically, kind of what we've seen in Kansas City with Isaiah Pacheco and Jerick McKinnon. That said, obviously, in the New York Jets offense, especially when Zach Wilson under center, shouldn't be confused for having that same upside that we see in Kansas City. Moving on to Saturday, we had the Saints take down the Browns 17-10 in that horrible weather game. The Saints covered as 3.5-point dogs. The under cashed at 32.5. So Taysom Hill didn't completely kill us, maybe didn't give us the 3-touchdown masterclass, the 30-carry game that we were hoping for in these weather conditions, but did go ahead and return that tight end 8 finish on the week. So didn't disappoint, probably didn't win you your matchup, though, in its own right on the season. Now the overall tight end 15, and look, he's been really, really good as a pure rushing quarterback, and they don't use him specifically as a running back. They're always direct snaps, but whatever they do, it is working. 6.6 yards per carry on the season, guys. I mean, you look at 74 players with at least 50 carries. The only guys beating that are Justin Fields and Lamar Jackson. So, yeah, I understand. Bit more of a pass threat coming from those guys than Taysom, but he's just been an awesome runner. And, I mean, he gets yards after contact, too. Only guys averaging at least 4 yards after contact per carry this season. Taysom Hill, Justin Fields, Rashad Penny, Breece Hall out of that group. Make sure you remember just how damn good Breece Hall was before he got injured. Sorry, guys, didn't mean to pull down the vibes with that reminder. On the other side of things, so with Deshaun Watson and the Browns, we've talked about this on this podcast, where since his first game against the Texans, he's played a lot better than the box score has indicated. And we saw that kind of rear its ugly head again during this one, where, again, porous weather conditions. I don't want to be too hard on these receivers, but Amari Cooper probably should have had a 12-yard touchdown in the back of the end zone, dropped it. later in the game, Donovan Peoples-Jones and David Njoku, back-to-back passes that hit them in the hands, couldn't come down with it, probably should have been 15-yard touchdown. So the Bengals game, we had a couple more instances of that. Watson has played better than the box score has indicated. Even then, though, guys, he hasn't been anything close to what that contract says he should be and what he honestly was earlier in his career before the suspension. So pick a stat, any stat, even trying to add that context, and you're not going to see anything close to a good quarterback. He is 38th among 44 qualified quarterbacks in PFF passing grade, dead ass last in passer rating, 43rd in yards per attempt, and 32nd adjusted completion rate. So look, adjusted completion rate compensates for drops, PFF passing grade. That's the exact type of stuff that PFF is trying to account for in order to beat stats like passer rating and yards per attempt. So the stats without context basically say Watson has been one of, if not the single worst quarterback in the league this year. The stats with context still say he's been anyone's idea of a bad quarterback. So yep, first four games after a two-year layoff, he's rusty. What did you expect? Hey, it's just a matter of he sucked this year on the field, even adding in that context of the drops. Hopefully for the Browns' sake, you know, they can get him moving on and playing like the guy they signed him to be in 2023 and beyond. Bills took down the Bears in another horrific weather one here, 35-13, covering us 8.5-point favorites. The over cash, though, at 40.5. Josh Allen, just insane how efficient he can be as a fantasy quarterback, especially. Not trying to, you know, disparage the guy in real life. We all know how great Josh Allen is, but just from a fantasy side of things, I mean, the overall QB1 on the season, as I've said this stat roughly 1,000 times here, but what's another one going to hurt? Threatening now to join Brett Favre and Steve Young as the only quarterbacks in NFL history with three straight seasons as the overall fantasy QB1. And this year in particular, 14 games as a top 12 fantasy quarterback. Mahomes has 13, Jalen Hurts has 12, Joe Burrow has 11, Trevor Lawrence with 10, the only other quarterbacks with double-digit QB1 finishes this year. On the Bears side of things, so Justin Fields, he's still not making the best decisions with the football. If you look at his turnover-worthy play rate, it's at 4.3%. That's the seventh highest mark in the NFL. We're going to talk a little more about that group later, but you do see, you know, Josh Allen in that kind of high turnover-worthy play group, and then you see a lot of quarterbacks that we generally just all believe objectively to be bad at football. So that said, and I understand turnover is very important to the game. If there's anything as a passer you probably shouldn't be bad at, it's turning the ball over. But that said, he's been much more, I guess, average in these other passing statistics, which given the wide receivers he's been throwing to all season long, is pretty impressive. So passer rating, Fields this year, 22nd among 44 qualified quarterbacks. Yards per attempt, he's 17th. Adjusted completion rate, 30th. Big time throw rate, 24th. PFF passing grade because of those turnovers, though, all the way down at 39. Fifth lowest mark in the league. So Justin Fields, again, we know how damn incredible the guy is as a rusher, still has a fighting chance of breaking Lamar's single season record, even after having that dud on the ground against the Bills. It is good to see, though, even with this bad, horrific group of pass catchers that we knew was bad before the season started, and then we lose the number one option in Darnell Mooney. Like, do you expect things to get better? It is good to see, outside of turnovers, that Fields has been able to give us at least something close to average passing efficiency. Chiefs took down the Seahawks 24-10 here, covering us 10.5-point favorites, the under cash at 50.5. So looking at Mahomes, who for my money's worth should be the NFL's MVP for the 2022 regular season, 2018 still stands out as his best year in terms of most passing efficiency stats, but at least, guys, he is far more in line with the guy we saw from 2018 to 2020 as opposed to the quarterback who was leading an offense that took a slight step back in 2021. So similar sentiment as what Aaron Rodgers said. I think this wasn't this offseason, a couple years ago, where he said, you know, his down years are still going to be career years for a lot of quarterbacks out there. So that is definitely also true for Patrick Mahomes. But again, the fact that you take away Tyreek Hill, arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL, and I think he'd be on anyone's top five list, you take that away and Mahomes is still able to give us one of, again, just the best seasons that you'll see out of any quarterback basically over the past half decade of action. So fantastic stuff from Mahomes in this offense. Since 2018, now the Chiefs scoring ranks first, fifth, sixth, fourth, and second. Their total yard ranks first, sixth, first, third, and first. Pretty good. All right, on the Seahawks side of things, DK Metcalf, also flirting with one of the better seasons of his career, despite having what was supposed to be a quarterback downgrade. So 1.96 yards per out run for Metcalf this season. That is right in line with what he's been able to achieve throughout his career. And credit to DK, you know, with these drops, we talk about it being a stat that, especially in fantasy, we shouldn't worry about. But obviously, catching the football consistently is a major part of any wide receiver's job. You could argue it's the most important part of their job. In 2019 to 2020, guys, I know Deontay Johnson's usually been the poster boy for this, but Metcalf was right up there with him. 18 total drops from 2019 to 2020. Just 7 total drops by Metcalf over these past 2 years, though. So great job by him. 86 receptions are already a career high. And great job by Geno, feeding this freaking walking, talking monster the football more than ever before. Already with 128 targets in just 15 games. His career high mark is just at 129. That took him 16 and 17 games, respectively. Vikings took down the Giants 27-24. Giants did cover as 4.5-point dogs. The over cashed at 48.5. My goodness, TJ Hawkinson. I don't know about you guys. I mean, we've seen plenty of Hawkinson. He had the amazing first game in the NFL. He had the boom earlier this season where he went for like a 178 and 2 touchdowns. Like, I knew the guy wasn't a top 10 pick by accident, but just seeing him light up the scoreboard the way he's doing as a member of the Vikings, it's surprised me and impressed me. And maybe I'm just, you know, especially in awe because he sent my home fantasy freaking playoff team straight to hell this last Saturday. But that, you know, fact and obvious personal bias aside, it's hard not to be impressed with everything he's done this year. Only Travis Kelce has more receptions and receiving yards at the position. He is officially past Mark Andrews as fantasy's tight end too. I mean, you look at the consistency since he got on the Vikings, truly only one dud. So with Vikings, I believe since week 9, we've seen Hawkinson finish as the tight end 5, 7, 11, 6, 16, 6, 22, and most recently the overall tight end 1. So little fun fact here on the season, Hawkinson and Irv Smith have combined for over 1,000 receiving yards together. Basically like, you know, that Kobe Bryant, Kwame Brown stat from a few years ago, but you could imagine. On the Giants side of things, how about this, guys? Isaiah Hodgins, 8 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. He now has 77.9 PPR points since signing with the Giants on November 2nd. Kenny Golladay has 98.2 PPR points since getting $72 million to sign with the Giants in 2021. So sorry to make this about Kenny Golladay, but it really is shocking to me just how far off this guy fell. I get it, an aging, injured, contested catch artist. We've seen these types of receivers, your Dez Bryants of the world. I say that as truly Dez is my probably favorite football player ever, but they don't last as well. And we're seeing this again with Kenny Golladay, but just, this isn't someone that has always sucked. Maybe you Gen Zers out there aren't old enough to remember, but guys, in 2019, even with only 8 games at Matthew Stafford, Golladay went for 1,190 yards and 11 touchdowns, which was actually either the highest in the league or tied for the most receiving scores in the league that year. Last 3 years combined, though, just 910 receiving yards and 2 scores, both of which he managed to score with the Lions. Bengals took down the Patriots 22-18 since he covered as 3-point favorites. The under cashed at 41.5. So I remember going into this year, you could actually look at the games where Higgins and Chase had played together, and it didn't fully lean towards T. Higgins, but it definitely made it more of a 1A, 1B argument. And look, T. Higgins is incredible. We've seen more than enough evidence of that. But now having a 27-game sample size of healthy versions of Chase and Higgins together, we can see which one Burrow really prefers, and it shouldn't be too much of a surprise. In these 27 games, Jamar Chase, 230 targets. T. Higgins, just 200. Chase obviously leads the way in receptions, yards, and touchdowns, and he's been the more efficient receiver, 2.24 yards per route run compared to 2.09. I would just say credit to Joe Burrow for focusing his targets so much along his top two receivers, because we have, again, Chase at 230, Higgins at 200. In those games, though, Tyler Boyd at 137 targets and Joe Mixon at 110, only other guys over 100. So maybe Trenton Irwin is going to start factoring into this. I mean, the guy's scrappy, he's a gym rat, he reminds me of a Patriots slot receiver. He kind of seems like a guy that is probably a coach's kid, first guy in, last guy out, hard hat, lunch pail. I can go on and on with this all day long, but in all seriousness, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, King State Kings, both have been awfully royal over the past 2 years. On the Patriots side of things, shout out to Marcus Jones, guy. I mean, this rookie cornerback who's a turned returner, turned freaking receiver, just making plays all over the place. I believe it was Doug Kead. Yeah, I think it was Doug who actually said it. Awesome new Patriots podcast by Doug, you know, former PFFer. I'm not going to air on my grievances on that again, but Doug has been, you know, truly one of my favorite guys to work with over these past few years. And again, just doing fantastic stuff now over at Pat's Chat Podcast. So at Doug Kied, D, obviously you guys know Doug, K-Y-E-D is how you spell that tricky last name. But Doug brought up the point that only Ramondre Stevenson has more total touchdowns than Marcus Jones this season on the Patriots. So another fun stat from the Ringer's Roger Sherman. Marcus Jones is the first player with a receiving touchdown, punt return touchdown, and pick six in the same season since 1947. And we're getting to one of these, you know, it's like, you get these crazy, it's a little bit different, but I do crack up in basketball when you get these, you know, crazy stats going on. And then it's like, yeah, first guy to have all these assists, rebounds, and points in a game since Wilt Chamberlain. And by the way, he did it 30 times. So I don't think we have the Wilt Chamberlain of the NFL standing out there from 1947 the same way the NBA does. But either way, Marcus Jones, absolutely spectacular this season. Great season again overall for that third round rookie. Would love to see him get more and more involved on the offense as his career progresses. Panthers took down the Lions 37-23. Carolina covered, obviously, as 2.5-point dogs. The over cashed at 43.5. Guys, the Panthers ran for 320 yards against the Lions. Detroit had allowed 331 rushing yards combined in their previous 4 weeks of action. Just completely wild to see Deontay Foreman, Chuba Hubbard, and company have that much success on the ground. But also, shout out to DJ Moore here. We've now seen him with 4 games with Sam Darnold this season. He's gone for 103 yards in a touchdown, 73 yards in a touchdown, and 83 yards in a touchdown. Oh yeah, there's a goose egg thrown in there, but come on, beggars can't be choosers. The fact that we've gotten truly now 3 booms and just 1 bust from DJ with Darnold under center, great to see. That said, this offense has been so run heavy, it's hard to be overly optimistic about DJ in this ever important week 17, because he's actually only averaging 5.5 targets per game with Darnold under center compared to 7.5 before. The difference has been he's making way more out of those targets, averaging 0.75 touchdowns per game with Darnold, only 0.3 without. So maybe you can keep it on, keep it on. Up the Panthers' lovely schedule right now, and they are going to be actually on the road against Tampa Bay this Sunday. So you'd at least like to think that the weather is not going to be overly bad. But with DJ, hey, the fact that he now has boom in his, you know, potential range of outcomes certainly have come a long way since some of that atrocious stretches that we've seen earlier on in the year. Shane Zylstra, Lions, 3 touchdowns. Did you guys not see this coming? Unfortunately, such a tight end rotation heavy offense that, guys, hot take here, I'm not going to be, you know, ranking Shane Zylstra overly high in the old week 17 ranks, but hey, 3 touchdowns, you got to give the guy a shout out for that. Just like Jesper Holstad for the Bears, we were hyping him up from that preseason performance for the ages. But for real, want to quickly note this RB usage since DeAndre Swift got back. And the main problem here is that we could probably live with this if it was only Swift and Jamal Williams, but Justin Jackson is involved, and he's not as involved as Swift or Jamal Williams, but he's involved enough to make this really problematic for fantasy managers, pretty much all of them involved. So since week 8 that Swift got back into action, Jamal Williams has 227 snaps, Swift's at 218, Justin Jackson at 140 though. Carries is Jamal 132, Swift only 55, Jackson 33. Targets, Jamal only has 6, Swift has 40, Justin Jackson has 13 though. So Swift in week 13, he finished as the overall RB5, otherwise hasn't finished higher than the RB18. And Jamal Williams now 5 straight games outside the position's top 24. So with Jackson, like, Jamal has such a low chance now of getting involved in the passing game. And unfortunately, he's also taking away a lot of Swift's extra carries in the run game. So I don't think it's like coaching malpractice. You look at it, and Jackson during these stretches has by and large been the more effective rusher and, you could argue, receiver. Not with every stat, but just in terms of some of these, you know, rushing yards after contact, yards per reception. Justin Jackson has not been bad. It's just annoying for fantasy managers when we got, again, 3 guys in this situation to deal with. Ravens took down the Falcons 17-9. Baltimore covered as 6.5-point favorites. The under cashed at 35.5 points. So we've now gotten 3 games with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards back in action, weeks 14 through 16. Snaps, Dobbins leads the way 72-53. But similar to what we just talked about, guys, there's enough of a third party going on to make this messy for both guys. So Dobbins 72 snaps, Gus Edwards 53. But then Justice Hill and Kenyon Drake have combined for 43 snaps in their own right. So the carries, luckily, we're not seeing that third back involved. It's Dobbins 40, Gus 31. Hill and Drake have combined for just two carries. But the targets, Hill and Drake have four of the six available targets to this backfield over the past 3 weeks. So with JK, he looks healthier. The offense, hopefully, if we get Lamar Jackson back in week 17 and beyond, we'll have more scoring opportunities. But really with Dobbins and to a slightly lesser extent Gus, you're just hoping you can make the most out of 13 to 15 carries per game. With the Falcons, Tyler Allgeier officially leaping over Cordarrelle Patterson. And, you know, it is what it is. Allgeier's been a fantastic rookie running back this season. And you pull up any rushing efficiency measure you want, and it's going to say that he has been the superior option to Cordarrelle Patterson, as much as it pains me to say that. But where I do get a little annoyed is that, you know, Cordarrelle out there, as we know, more than capable of taking the defense's attention, all the places he can line up, wide receiver. The guy volunteered to play tight end. He wanted to play safety last year. This is a guy that you can use all over the offense. I don't see CPAT playing fewer snaps than Demir Byrd, than Michael Pruitt, than Parker freaking Hesse as a way for the Falcons to win. And again, I gave Arthur Smith his flowers, as you might say, earlier in the year when we were looking at this offense. We were mad about the usage, but they were doing well. And that was true. Weeks 1 through 8, number 4 ranked offense in EPA per play, tied for 6 in points per game. However, weeks 9 through 16, 22nd in EPA per play and 28th in points per game. I understand Kyle Pitts got injured in week 10, and that did have something to do with it. Just not ideal for this offense, where, again, really seemed to be overperforming during the first half of the season, and we have seen that come to fruition down the stretch. Only final note now, we have seen 4 games without Kyle Pitts, and Drake London has emerged as a much more viable wide receiver 3, even wide receiver 2 option. So targets in those games, 4, 12, 11, and 9. He's finished as the wide receiver 76. That was a dud. But then the wide receiver 20, wide receiver 26, and wide receiver 14. So God forbid we get an actual quarterback in Atlanta in 2023 and beyond. Could see a nice bounce back year 2 from Drake London. Texans took down the Titans 19-14. Houston covered as 3.5-point dogs, under cashed at 34.5 points. So I just wanted to check on this one. Basically, I go through every game, I look at the box scores, some of the usage stuff, and I just try to think like of one question that hopefully I can quantify for you guys and get some actionable takeaways. And for Houston, I just wanted to see, where does Davis Mills actually stand out among the second-year quarterbacks? Because last year, when you looked at it, obviously, Mac Jones, with the way he played as a rookie, he was the by and far away most efficient passer from that group of quarterbacks. But Davis Mills, with a lot of these stats, you could argue was second. I was curious if maybe that was still the case this year. It is not. He is actually dead last in yards per attempt, 4th among the 5 available second-year quarterbacks in T-Law, Fields, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, and Davis Mills, also 4th in passer rating. So basically, Davis Mills, you can say he's been better than Zach Wilson. Unfortunately, that's about it for him in his sophomore campaign. Derrick Henry, how about this, guys? Stayed healthy. What happens when Derrick Henry stays healthy? Well, he has 1,808 total yards and 13 touchdowns. Good for to be the PPR RB4 on the season. And I guess the best part with Henry this year has been the elevated role in the passing game. Again, you look at it, and I think he was at one point PFF's lowest grade receiver, but then he had the highest yards per route run. So the drops look terrible. I mean, I'm sure someone could put together 90 seconds of just one atrocious drop after another from Henry, but God forbid he can exist in that 1 to 2 seconds of, you know, the snap happening, running his route, getting the ball in his hands. Look the hell out when you get this guy in open field. Credit to the Titans for managing to do that more than ever this year. Career high, 32 receptions. I mean, his previous career high was just 19, 379 receiving yards this year. Previous career high, just 206. So literally has a chance to double his previous career high marks in receptions and receiving yards. Great day to have Derrick Henry on the fantasy squad. 49ers took down the Commanders 37-20. San Fran covered as 6.5-point faves, over cashed easily at 37.5. Shout out George Kittle, still operating as one of the game's single best tight ends. I believe Travis Kelce on his awesome podcast with Jason Kelce was even going out there calling Kittle the best of the group. Told Kittle to pretty hilariously stop blocking so well, so they have to throw him the ball more often. So kudos to Travis for being a good sport about it, as Jason immediately brought up. Obviously would have been easy and probably objectively true. I mean, you can bring up the stats, especially look at just in terms of pure receiving numbers for Travis to just say, yeah, I'm the best guy out there. Cool move by him. But anyway, back to Kittle this year, third in yards per reception, sixth in yards after the catch per reception, fourth in yards per out run. Only Dallas Goedert and Travis Kelce have graded out higher as a true receiver. So Dwayne McFarland and myself, we said this, you know, throughout the summer, even last couple of years, one game against the aliens to save the planet, I want George Kittle as my tight end, all things considered. On the Commander side of things, looks like we could be looking at a quarterback change. Heinicke did get benched for a now healthy Carson Wentz in this one. And zooming back and out and looking at the season, Heinicke is more of a risk taker, I guess you could say, gunslinger than Wentz, at least in this version of the offense. I know we've seen different additions of Wentz over the years, but overall, Wentz has the higher PFF passing grade. He also has the higher big-time throw rate, slightly less yards per attempt, slightly better adjusted completion rate. That can usually be explained in this case by Heinicke having the higher average target depth. The big problem, guys, has just been these turnover-worthy plays. Nobody has a higher turnover-worthy play rate than Taylor Heinicke this season. So if you put Wentz back in, yes, it's not going to be fantastic for Terry McLaurin because he's not going to get as many 50-50, some might call them hospital balls, you know, down the field where he just has to go up there, try to make a play and be great. That said, the offense does seem to move just a little bit more consistently with Carson Wentz. So I get it. Wentz versus Heinicke, it's Muhammad versus McLovin all over again. Why the hell is it between Wentz and Heinicke? I have a hard time believing this will be the case in 2023 and beyond. For my money's worth, though, I do think Wentz gives them the slightly higher floor. And honestly, probably the higher ceiling as well. I think Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Taylor Heinicke. If you don't want to put either of them in your top 25, top 30 in the league, I will not have any problems with that. Cowboys took down the Eagles 40-34. Cowboys covered as 4.5-point faves. The over cashed with ease at 48. And shout out to Dak Prescott on this Cowboys offense. Number one scoring since he got back into action. Here are the Cowboys point totals since Dak returned in week 7. 24, 49, 28, 40, 28, 54, 27, 34, and 40 points. That's pretty good, guys. They're averaging 36 points per game with Dak under center. And he's not taking care of the ball, as we've all seen with all these interceptions that everyone just wants to bring up first and foremost. So, yeah, the interceptions aren't ideal, but guess what? They're scoring a ton of points. That kind of is the quarterback's job first and foremost. Only the Chiefs have been a more efficient offense during the stretch in terms of EPA per play. And again, they're not even firing on all cylinders. Throughout all this, Dak is averaging just 7.8 yards per attempt this year, which isn't bad by any stretch, but he was at 8.2 and 8.4 in 2019 and 2020. Back when this offense had quite a few more weapons, I believe, to go around with the football, talking, of course, about Amari Cooper in the mix. So, hey, they got T.Y. Hilton, fantastic catch down the sideline. We continue to hear the OBJ chatter maybe happening this offseason, but just can't help but wonder, man, this is the number one ranked scoring offense with Dak, and it was last year as well with Amari Cooper in there, but God, could you imagine them just having, instead of Noah Brown, instead of T.Y. Hilton, Amari freaking Cooper out there? Incredible without him. Kudos to Dak. Kudos to Kellen Moore and the whole Cowboys organization for keeping on without the guy. Just can't help but think about that when, again, we're talking about just how high the ceiling truly could be for this passing game. With the Eagles, I think we did continue to see the instance, and I believe fact at this point, this is the best supporting cast in all football. And that's not a slight at Jalen Hurts. It's not a slight at Gardner Minshew. We've seen both of those guys make more than enough plays to know just how good they are at football in their own right. But I did my study again, took away the PFF passing grades from the offenses and just averaged out the rushing, receiving, pass blocking, and run blocking. And once again, the Eagles are at the top of the league. Rest of that top five. So best supporting cast, not including the passing grade. We have the Falcons, the Ravens, the Browns, and the 49ers. So Falcons and Ravens, I know you guys are like, what the hell? How come they're popping up there? We've seen those wide receiver rooms, and I understand what you're saying. A lot of that is going to their dominance and their really high grades, pass blocking and run blocking, and their receivers like not grading out horrifically. They're just not being used the same. So on the top of the side, though, Eagles, I do think that makes sense. The bottom five offenses in terms of supporting cast, Texans, Cardinals, Chargers, Colts, and Jets. Steelers took down the Raiders 13-10, covering as 2.5-point faves, undercashed at 38. So the Deontay Johnson season is just ridiculous at this point. 130 targets without a touchdown. That is the most in the NFL, and it would easily shatter the all-time record for most targets in the season without a touchdown. So shout out to our friends over at Pro Football Reference for their awesome Stathead, you know, just membership. I've been a subscriber for years. Love Stathead, love Pro Football Reference. But guys, this target stat only goes back to 1992, and the all-time record for most targets in a season without a receiving touchdown goes to Bears wide receiver Michael Timpson with just 109. So again, Deontay already at 130. He's got two more weeks to try to find the end zone. Goodness, man. Just it's wild how good this opportunity has been. We always say, you know, we're trying to chase opportunity in fantasy land. And I understand when we look at running backs and stuff, it can be a lot less of a, you know, just hang your hat. It can be a lot more of a hang your hat on the opportunity with running backs versus wide receivers. But just with Deontay specifically, guys, 59.8 fantasy points overall below expectation. So basically what that means, if you just only looked at the opportunity, only the targets involved, Deontay, the wide receiver 9 in expected fantasy points this season. What is he actually? The wide receiver 31. Sheesh. With the Raiders, Davante Adams, kind of his third straight dud, but I don't know, guys. You still look at the numbers. 15 games, 88 catches, 1,290 yards, and 12 touchdowns. But the 55% catch rate this year is his lowest mark since 2015. So a little bit more of a downfield role in this offense and, you know, hasn't quite been as dominant. 2.3 yards per route run. Last year was at 2.7 and 2.87. So we're being a bit nitpicky here. He's still awesome, but he hasn't been that clear-cut number one or number two best wide receiver in the league this year. If you still want to put him up there, I don't think that's necessarily incorrect, but just I'm saying in terms of that yards per route run number that he was just dominating the rest of the field with this year, he does find himself behind Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Chris Olave, CeeDee Lamb, Stephon Diggs, and Cooper Kupp. Pretty damn good wide receivers to only find yourself behind. I'm just saying Davante Adams hasn't had that sort of year where, for my money's worth, coming into this year, the best wide receiver in the NFL, I do believe Tyreek Hill has taken that award at least for 2022. And Justin Jefferson's so damn good too. You could put him there as well. I do stick slightly with Tyreek, but man, Jefferson, again, if you want to say him, I'm not going to call you a liar. You could very well be right. Moving on to Sunday now, Packers took down the Dolphins 26-20. Green Bay covered as 3.5-point dogs. The under cashed at 49.5. The Aaron Jones usage, guys. This was a tough one, pretty tough to, you know, put on the smiley face for the family with the Christmas presents and all that when Aaron Jones isn't getting on the freaking field. So 8 touches, his lowest in a game since week 1, 38% snaps, his lowest since week 13, which is when he actually got hurt and couldn't even finish the game in the first place. So he's just really banged up. It's just unfortunate that we have these situations where we just don't have a good lean on exactly how healthy the guy is, because last week he was on the injury report with a knee. Limited all week, didn't have an injury designation. The week before, limited all week, no designation with an ankle injury. Before the bye, shin and glute issues, same thing. He's practicing every day. He doesn't have an injury designation. He's just unfortunately playing through the pain. We did see him on the sideline, you know, getting taped up. Very possible he re-aggravated something and they just never actually reported it to the doctors or whatever, or officially reported it to get the probable or questionable to return stuff. Just unfortunate to see this happen, you know, in week 16. It's been such a good season for Jones otherwise. On the Dolphins side of things, yeah, I mentioned before that turnover-worthy play rate. So here are the only quarterbacks this year with a turnover-worthy play rate over 4%, going from worst to still bad, but, you know, not quite at the bottom of the leaderboard. Taylor Heinicke, Zach Wilson, Jameis Winston, P.J. Walker, Cooper Rush, Josh Allen, Justin Fields, Matt Ryan, and Tua Tagovailoa. So with Tua this year, still number one in yards per attempt. Still number one in passer rating, but shout out to my former co-host, love the man, Kevin Cole, Unexpected Points newsletter. Go freaking check it out, everyone. Tua, he's got that Alex Smith in him, guys. I'm not so sure at this point that you can put Tua into any offense in the NFL and he's going to turn them into an elite group. Now, it's by most of these numbers, again, yards per attempt at its core. That's what you want. The most yards per pass attempt possible. They're number one. Two is the one throwing that football. You can say some of the deep balls are underthrown. They're still number one. Same thing with passer rating. These are not quarterback specific stats. They are part of it, but they do not tell the whole story. I understand that, but they're still good measures of the overall passing game. And Tua is obviously a big part of the offense that's making that happen. It does come down to, and I see why, that we have these conversations where Tua against guys like Justin Herbert, like Joe Burrow, like the guys that when you watch them, you know they're doing more out of structure, more, you know, just, I guess, having the higher ceiling for the offense, regardless of the teammates around him. Just been an interesting year for Tua. So, hey, my opinion on him has sure risen. I would think the Dolphins would be crazy not to try to continue to see what he can do more in the future, in his second year in the scheme, you know, another year removed from some of those bad injuries he had in the past, specifically the hip issue. Not saying that's still, you know, bothering him or anything, but just something to keep an eye on with Tua. If he can just chill out a little bit on these turnover-worthy plays, certainly would be the next best step for the guy. Rams massacred the Broncos 51-14, covering as 3-point dogs, over cash at 36. Took Nathaniel Hackett down with him. He has been fired. Must have been that Patrick Starr call on the Russell Wilson interception that finally did it in. It's one thing to lose, one thing to get blown out. It's another thing to have Patrick freaking Starr mock your franchise quarterback, alleged franchise quarterback, in front of the entire country on Christmas. So that was the last straw. Shameful season for Hackett and the Broncos. They bring back Adam Gase. That would be, look, I'm sorry, Broncos fans, that'd be terrible for you guys. But in terms of just the unintentional comedy, or just maybe intentional comedy, the funniest hire I think they could make would be Adam Gase. Because remember, he was quote unquote awesome with Peyton Manning. And as we remember Peyton Manning, like, what was the point of having an offensive coordinator? Peyton's going to change the play freaking 30 times before the snap. I remember as a kid playing that Madden Superstar mode, being a running back. I got drafted on the Colts and I, you know, had to quit the game. I had to restart because I was so annoyed with Peyton changing the play 10 times before every snap. Shout out to that old version of Madden, though, for being more realistic than they probably are today with it. All that to say, yeah, not a very good year for the Broncos, as I'm sure you guys could already tell. One good thing, though, has been Jerry Jeudy really coming on strong here. So he finished now, let's see, it was 6-7 weeks ago. He had a nice little two-game stretch where he finishes as the PPR wide receiver 16, then the wide receiver 13. Next week, he gets hurt, misses a game or two, comes back, wide receiver 39, then the wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 22. So that's four finishes as the wide receiver 22 or better in his last five games, not impacted by injury. Before a season, I was not sure who was better between Jeudy and Sutton. Now I am confident in saying Jeudy is the ascending receiver and should be the feature number one, or at a minimum higher rank than Sutton here down the stretch in Denver. Real quick with the Rams, shout out Cam Akers. Have a hard time believing he helped too many teams, win their week 16 matchup. I guess he was probably cut on in enough leagues just from being that original horrific 6th round pick that went wrong for so many people. So, hey, maybe you picked him up, you saw the usage moving the right way, and you were able to benefit from that overall RB1 performance last week. Regardless, it has been a nice little stretch run for him now, 70% plus snaps in 3 of the last 4 games. And accordingly, guys, weeks 13 through 16, Akers has 78 total PPR points. In weeks 1 through 12 combined, he had just 37.2. So, hey, Akers, someone that he was one of the few running backs I was willing to dabble with sometimes in those middle rounds, like when I was going true zero RB and I didn't even get an anchor in the first couple of rounds. I did have a few teams where I took Akers usually in that round 6, and especially if he fell past that, thinking that he could get this role and just have that workhorse 70% plus snap role, because McVay historically has been more willing to hand it out to just about anyone. But it was too close with Daryl Henderson, which was a mistake on my part, and also just whiffing, as I think a lot of people did, on how bad this Rams offense was in general. At least, again, maybe, just maybe, there is a stray best ball squad or something where Akers helped you out. Finally, guys, last game here took place on Sunday night. Buccaneers took down the Cardinals 19-16. Cardinals covered as 7.5-point dogs, under cash at 41.5. So Leonard Fournette revealed today on Twitter, you know, basically calling someone out, quit calling me slow. I'm playing through a Liz Frank injury. And yeah, that's certainly something we have no idea what kind of pain these guys are going through, more weeks than not. And then when they do play through the pain, we basically throw our hands up and say, well, you're healthy enough to play. How come you're not playing better? So my only thing I would push back on, and we brought this up throughout the year, this isn't a Zeke Pollard, it's not even a Montgomery Khalil Herbert situation in terms of the stats telling us how much better the backup is than the starter. And in those two situations, we've also talked about Montgomery and Zeke being damn good running backs in their own right, just the backups have been a little bit more efficient. But the whole, like, oh, it's coaching malpractice how Rashad White isn't out there more for Leonard Fournette, That's where I got pushed back on, because they've both been, by far and large, they've both been bad running backs this year inside of arguably the league's single worst rushing attack. So yeah, Rashad White is averaging more yards per carry. He's at 3.9 and Fournette's at 3.6, identical yards after contact numbers. White's been slightly more shifty as a rusher, but Fournette's been a lot better as a receiver, 1.34 yards per out run compared to 1.14 for Rashad White. So it's one of those things where, yeah, if you take away either of these guys, like we've seen, there's enough volume with Tom Brady so willing to check the ball down that either Fournette or White without the other locked in top 10 running back in full PPR scoring, as we've seen both guys produce this year when given that opportunity. But together, neither has been good enough to be more than, you know, a fairly consistent RB2 in full PPR scoring, which, hey, it's still working for Fournette out there. He still has a bigger role. And I'll continue to go with Fournette over Rashad White until the Buccaneers change anything with that. But once again, I don't think they're exactly looking at a situation where they need to take Fournette off the field, because if anything, these stats don't tell the whole story. And as we heard Byron Leftwich tell us in the offseason and last year, just the fact that Brady is so comfortable having Fournette on the field makes sense to keep him out there as long as that foot isn't hurting him too bad. On the Cardinals side of things, man, Aaron Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, just some of these Christmas disappointments not making the day easy, because, you know, when you got Trace McSorley out there, you got to run the offense through Greg Dortch, of course. So first major bust for Hopkins. We knew it was a downgrade situation. Same thing for Hollywood Brown. Just unfortunate to see it happen in such an important playoff game after Hopkins had really done a great job coming back from that suspension. So now we have exactly one constant in Arizona, and it is running back James Conner, guys. Since returning from the injury, PPR RB19, RB2, RB15, RB4, RB6, and RB12. So disaster of a season in Arizona. We'll see how much longer, you know, the K2 Kingsbury Kyler Murray partnership keeps on going. Injuries haven't helped. There's been a lot of factors to their demise, just like any team out there. But it is good to see James Conner getting that workhorse role, getting those fantasy points that we knew were going to be there for him if he managed to stay healthy. And with that, going to wrap up another edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Freaking week 17 here on the horizon, everyone. What a great day to be great. I do got some funky traveling to do this week, so the waiver pod might be up at a different time tomorrow. I know waivers aren't that big of a thing to even worry about going into week 17 for many of you, as always, but I will figure out a way how to get at least something up there. Of course, we'll get the sheeshes and some injury notes otherwise. If not, yeah, I'll be back on Wednesday with another game-by-game preview pod to get you guys ready to go for week 17. I'll be back with my guy Nick Botterford on Friday going over all the injuries. And then week 18 and beyond, going to have a slightly different schedule, probably down to one or two pods per week just for the next few weeks there as I get things figured out and we get through the real life playoffs. So again, guys, can't thank you all enough for tuning in throughout the year. You know, I got a lot of the Spotify wrapped, you know, tweet ads and, you know, just you guys putting in a lot of hours here. And it really means a lot because, again, without you guys, none of this would be possible. I know we've had a, you know, cycling of co-host throughout, you know, my time here, and that certainly hasn't been ideal, but certainly, you know, something that not exactly you know, in my control all the time. So again, thank you guys for being loyal, thank you for sticking with me, and I just hope that the fantasy squads are continuing to look hot. We'll continue to put in all the work I can to make that a continued reality. So thanks again for tuning in to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Ian Harditz. Until next time, take care, everybody.